Well, welcome back to Coast, and welcome back to Open Lines here. And don't forget our holiday schedule. Jimmy Church in on Saturday, Independence Day tomorrow. I'll be back on Sunday. Also emerging artists and some great guests, and looking forward to it. And then we'll get your week rolling all over the place. I was looking at the holiday schedule for the rest of the year, and of course, typically, we're going to be on live for Thanksgiving. We'll be live on Christmas Eve and Christmas night. Christmas Eve is on a Thursday. Christmas Day night is on a Friday. And then the same with New Year's Eve and New Year's night. So those holidays are all covered for you. So right after your festivities, and let's get this year over with. Isn't that something we all want, to get rid of this 2020 as quickly as we can? Anyways, we'll come back with more Open Lines in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, and do take your own precautions. But definitely, folks, supplement. I'm a strong believer in that. Build up that immune system and see what happens for you. Let's go back to the phones. Let's go west of the Rockies. Gina Maria in the state of Washington. Hey, Gina.
Hello. Love and peace and healing, and God bless to everyone.
You're very kind to you. You're a sweet person. You know that?
Oh, God, I try to spread God and love everywhere I go.
Were you born out there?
No, I was born in New York. I was born in New Jersey, but I lived in New York and grew up there in foster homes.
How did you get way over to the state of Washington?
My mom, who ended up adopting me when I was 12 and a half, my sister and brother and I, she was putting the pages in as a kid put up for adoption and taking the pages out of kids adopted, and she was putting our pages in and saw we were normal, bright, healthy kids. And called my dad.
Now, did you, if I'm not too personal here, but did you ever want to find your biological parents?
Yes. My real mother came to me when she passed away and told me she loved me and told me to forgive her.
Perfect.
And
you did, knowing you.
Yes. And it lifts the weight off your shoulders. And my real dad, he might still be out there alive. My real last name was 40. F-O-R-T-Y, like the number.
Oh, really? Okay.
My Puerto Rican last name, yeah. So, anyhow, so there might be people who call in, maybe it's related to me eventually here.
Wouldn't that be a small world if that happened, huh?
It would be awesome. It would be awesome.
If your father called in right now, would you talk to him on the show?
Absolutely.
You would?
Absolutely.
What would you first ask him?
I would first tell him that I love him and everything's okay. Just talk to me.
How old were you when you were given up for adoption?
12 and a half. I was in foster home since I was like 4.
So you remember, though?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, anyways, that's not why you called. I'm sorry I took so much of your time.
No. No, and I just wanted to tell everybody, please play for the young gal who, the Amish gal, all our prayers.
Oh, my gosh. 18 years old, disappeared.
Situation.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I called in on a lighter note. So I have these dowsing rods, and they're two separate rods, and they're made of copper. They have a copper handle, and then the copper piece that goes inside that comes out like an L shape, and it'll come straight out.
And you hold them in each hand separately, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And when you ask a question, if nothing happens, that's like a no. And if they cross in front of each other like a cross, then that's like a yes.
Uh-huh. Okay. So, and they swivel, don't they?
Yeah, they swivel because you're holding a solid piece, but it has a swivel thing, you know, the piece that's inside moves, that's attached to the long pieces. Anyhow, so I was playing with that out in my backyard when I first got it, and we said, okay, help me to find a treasure. And all of a sudden, bam, they went outward, and both of them hit me. And I went, that was kind of weird. And then I said, well, let's try this again. Is there a treasure here? And bam, they both hit me. And I thought, this is really weird. I've never known anything like this to happen. So then I asked it one more time, help me find this treasure. And bam, they hit me. And finally it hit me. Oh, I guess I am the treasure. And so I thought,
you're the treasure. That's right.
Yes. Anyhow, well, thank you, and God bless you all.
You take care of yourself, Gina Maria. First-time caller, we're going to Chicago, Illinois. Majestical Horseman is the person. Hi there.
Hello, George. I'm really nervous. I've been listening to your show ever since COVID started, and I really enjoy it. And pretty you keep having this guy, Dr. Wallach, on.
Doc Wallach. And, he comes on every 6 weeks.
Yes. About 2 months ago, you had him on, and or a month or so ago, and he was talking about how he, as a kid, was taking these animal supplements.
Yes, alfalfa pills and stuff like that.
Yeah, well, because I was going to buy a supplement, so that's not going to happen. That was a little more than I could afford, so I started eating. I went to the MFA feed store, and I started eating the fortified supplements for about a month now. And I'll tell you what, George, I feel terrible.
Oh, you do?
I've went from 260 pounds to 310 pounds.
No.
And I feel absolutely horrible.
All right, so, the next time he's on, he was just on, so he'll be on in about 5 weeks or so. Call in. I want you to talk to him.
Yeah, because I feel terrible. I don't know what kind he's taking, so.
Yeah, let's find out. And by the way, the name, Majestical Horseman, where'd that come from?
Oh, it's my my Google name.
Oh, okay, cool. All right, but yeah, definitely the next time he calls, get in. Let's make sure what he ate and what you're eating are obviously two different things. You don't want to be eating the wrong stuff by any means. Joe in the Bronx, welcome to the program. Hey, Joe.
George, how are you?
I'm well, thanks.
Good, good. Glad to hear you're healthy.
I hope you are too, huh?
Well, yes, I am. And I'm impressed by your supplementations.
You have to do it, especially now. And I think that's a reason why that I've, knock on wood, have been immune from this thing so far.
Right. Yeah. You're building up your immune system.
Yep.
I wanted to talk to you about these protests and these statue lassoings and tearing downs. I don't know whether you've seen the speech that Trump gave.
Yeah, I watched it tonight.
Tonight.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, sure
did.
Oh, you did?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. I wanted to know what your opinion is on the Antifa and other groups that have sort of hijacked the protests. They say that George Soros
funds those. We who knows that for sure, I guess. But
right. They don't know that.
But somebody's funding them. I mean, they definitely have some financial backing.
And their Marxist philosophy, that ideology of critical theory, trying to disband the foundations of our culture, tearing down statues and history, and you know, just basically trying to wipe out all kinds of American history, our forefathers, and undermining all of that. That's right up the alley of Karl Marx.
They are looking for a total change in government and the way this country has been for years. And, you know, obviously Antifa and people like that are rabble-rousers. The protesters, the people who have an issue with, you know, police brutality, and it's out there. And I've talked to police officers who are friends who tell me it's out there. They have a point, but, you know, to loot, riot, burn down buildings is out of control.
It is out of control. And I think that, you know, violence begets violence. You know, it's just spreading this un-American philosophy of trying to accomplish what they're trying to do with their ideology.
What did you think of that St. Louis couple that came out with guns in front of their house in St. Louis a couple days ago?
Interesting. Yeah, they had busted through the gate of their mansion. And
it was private property.
Right, and they're protecting their property, and they have a Second Amendment right to do that.
And the guy who's a civil rights lawyer was petrified that something was going to happen to him.
Right, so I can't blame them. Anytime you have people that are just that have this mob mentality, you do have to be on alert.
Yeah. Now, would it have been better had they stayed in their house with their weapons and came out after something had happened? Breaking down the gate was bad. There's no doubt about that.
Right,
but I'm just wondering for his own security and safety now, if it would have been better just stay in the house and see what happens. Maybe the protesters just keep on going and so be it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think they posed a threat, and that's what worried the couple.
Would you have done that? Would you have gone out with a gun like that, with an assault weapon?
If I thought that it might be effective, if I thought that it might keep them away from the house, yes.
Well, it kept them away from the house.
Yeah, well, yeah, it accomplished what they set out to accomplish by defending their property and their lives.
I think I would have stayed in the house unless something really bad happened. And mm-hmm. then I would have come out and protected myself.
Okay, but the threat was there, George.
Yeah, you know, it was there, but the backlash for these poor folks is, who knows? They know where they live. I mean,
right.
What's going to happen? I mean, were you going to go to sleep with one eye open? You know.
Well, I'll take that 6-block radius Chaz in Seattle for an example. Nothing was done until they marched up to the mayor's house.
Right.
And she had to call for a group of 100 cops.
And they had a couple murders in that area.
And rapes.
And assaults, that's right.
Right. So, I mean, I guess people are kind of patient and standoffish until the threat comes to their doorstep and they realize, you know, they've got to take some action.
Oh, well, I would have broken up these people in that 6-block Seattle area that day.
Right.
You know,
I would
not have had them stop anything. I would have just...
give them the opportunity
exactly.
to, you know, wreak havoc within their autonomous little 6-block
radius. That's right. Exactly. It's not their city. It's ours.
It's ours. Yeah. That's true.
All right, Joseph. Everything. Are you still playing music?
Yes, I am. Thank you, George.
Good.
Yes, I am.
All right. Do something for us for Christmas.
I'll try.
Okay. Put it together. Thanks. Next up, Annie in Alabama is with us. Hello, Annie.
Oh, thank you, George, for taking my call.
Thank you, my dear. How are you?
Oh, I saw a shadow man about 10 days ago, and I was sitting on the front porch reading the newspaper in broad daylight. He came walking down the street right in front of my house, and he stepped behind a tree, and I kept an eye on him because I wanted to see who he was. So I waited on him to come on out from behind the tree and continue down the street. And when he did not, I went behind the tree, and there was nobody there.
Geez, did he have a hat on?
I didn't notice it because he was kind of like behind some bushes, my bushes. I wanted to see who was pulling my bushes, and I went out there, and there was nobody there.
Well, maybe that's a good thing.
Yes. Well, do you know that I looked up the law in the state of Washington to see what somebody could be charged with if they blocked my place of business?
Okay.
And there's a state law called criminal sabotage in the state of Washington. It's under Title 9, Chapter 9, and you can get a Class B felony and serve 20 years in the penitentiary just for blocking or impeding someone's place of business.
Unfortunately, they didn't give the police the back end and the strength to go and arrest all those people who were stopping things like that.
What kind of pansies are they?
Well, you saw what happened, and it took a couple murders and assaults for them to really have to go in and do what they had to do to break that up. That should have been done a long, long time ago, and you would have avoided some of those situations. Whose turn is it next? It is Mike in Woodbridge, New Jersey. Welcome to the program. Michael, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hi, George. How are you doing?
Good, Mike. Thank you.
This is an honor. I've been listening to you since the 90s.
Well, thank you. Art was in the 90s. I came in 2003, but thank you for staying with us.
I know. I listened to him, too. I mean, I listened to the show.
Okay, great.
I wanted to ask you an interesting question I've had about have you ever heard anything about the moon being artificial?
Yes.
And being driven in place?
It was towed into place.
I got this from the Cosmic Disclosures on Gaia, from the show that involved the secret space program.
Emery Smith, right?
Yeah, and they said, well, no, this is the older one, the one that involved David Wilcock and Corey Good.
Oh, okay. That was the first version.
Yeah, that was very interesting. I found it. They said that the Earth used to be very swampy millions of years ago, and you couldn't really live on it in hot. And then when the moon was driven into place by the humans that escaped the reptilians on, was it the Pleiades? I forgot where they escaped. It caused the whole entire planet to completely change. And I thought that's fascinating, though.
There are some that actually believe, Mike, that the moon is artificial.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that, too. But I just wanted your opinion on it.
Well, I think the moon was chumped out of the planet, our planet, and was a celestial object. I don't think it was towed into place. It's too big. And I don't think it's artificial, though some have said that we did an experiment and it pinged and kind of vibrated like a piece of metal hollow tube would vibrate if you clicked it or hit it with a hammer or something like that. But my personal feeling is I think the moon is a celestial object, like all the other moons that are out there in our solar system and God knows where else. But like you said, it's fascinating. Dee Dee's with us in Corvallis, Oregon. Welcome to the program. Hi, Dee Dee.
Hey, George. Happy to talk to you.
You too. You ready for Independence Day?
Yeah, because there's no substitution for human interaction.
No, and we need that now, don't we?
We're social creatures.
Yes, we are.
Don't be social nonsense. But most of the things you've been saying about wearing masks and what, I was pretty much in line with you. But here's the strange thing, and I guess I have to say that I just don't feel that any of us have been really told the truth about this COVID thing. I mean,
that's because I don't think they know.
Well, someone somewhere knows something.
Somebody does, but I mean, I still believe it was made in a lab, and they know that, but they won't tell us that. They won't admit it.
And I guess they're figuring we're just too, you know, dumb or stupid, or we'll have.
It happened too quickly. It went around the planet way too fast.
Yeah, and so what I wanted to call on is what, you know, is just frustrating me so much is in my area. I'm in what's called Benton County, and so on July 1st, and I've been reading the paper more on a daily basis, just kind of looking through stuff, and, you know, there's always the latest data and what's happening in your town, and so we've had 5 deaths in Oregon or in our county.
Your area, yeah.
You know, for a while now. So
and how many of the normal flu would you have had?
Well, of the 5 deaths, I would have to say probably none, but they were all over like 70. So they were in the hospital, and they were all like 70, 80, 90.
Yeah, they were in that range where they're susceptible to these things.
So as of July 1st, I'm looking over some data, you know, whatever, and it says, and it just one sentence, no new cases, meaning presumptive or otherwise, or testing or deaths, in Benton County. And then yesterday on the 2nd, all of a sudden, the numbers have tripled and doubled. And, you know, but we're still at 5 deaths. And I'm just feeling like, you know, the information just is, you know, is not true.
Have you met anybody or do you know anybody who's had COVID-19?
Personally, no.
Not a lot of people have.
Yes.
That's the other weird thing about this.
And the other strange thing is I'm wondering, I think just eventually we're all going to have it. It's going to be...
I think everybody has it in their system. It's our immune system that keeps fighting it. We don't show it. We're asymptomatic, to be sure. We're going to be back in a moment with a quick discussion with Uri Geller about some of his strange things. And welcome back to Coast. A few months ago, I had a chance to talk with mentalist Uri Geller about some of the amazing things that he does. Oh, boy, listen in. Uri, my friend, good to have you back.
Hey, George, fantastic being on your show again. And yes, I'm talking to you from Old Jaffa, which is right next to Tel Aviv in Israel. It is very beautiful here, sunny, but today it's raining. and dreary outside.
Oh.
But it's a fantastic country. I have come back to Israel after 48 years in the United States, England, and Japan. And we're very, very happy here.
I remember several years ago, Uri, when we were talking, you were on the program with me, and a rocket landed near where you were. Do you remember that?
Yes, of course. I came back to every war, George, with my wife, Hannah. And when the missiles were being fired at Israel, one landed right next to our little apartment. I no longer live in a big house, you know, on the banks of the River Thames. We are in a tiny little apartment, but with spectacular views of the Mediterranean. And, I longed to come back to Israel, as I guess every Israeli does. When I left in 1972, and we'll talk about that, you know, the CIA made some kind of a deal with the Mossad, and they let me out. I knew somewhere in the deep corners of my heart that I'll be back, and now we are back, and I'm talking to you.
That's great. I know you and I met back 20-some years ago when you were in St. Louis at the Jewish Community Center doing what you do best, and I came by because I wanted you on my local Nighthawk show, and that's where we first met, and here we are ever since.
That's correct, and I just want you to know that the CIA documents that were released a week ago are only the tip of the iceberg. There is so much more. And yes, I was very surprised that they were released because I kept working for the CIA for, you know, a couple of years after those tests, maybe even more. And then for other security and intelligence agencies around the world. I guess the lawsuit against the CIA, and you probably know more than I do, forced them to release these amazing documents. In these papers, George, they're only talking about the telepathy tests and rigorous laboratory control conditions, experiments that I went through. And those were mainly the drawings in shielded rooms. I was in Faraday cages. And just so our listeners will understand, when I do, for instance, telepathy or mind reading on a stage, any magician can duplicate that with trickery. But once you're under control conditions and locked in a metal cage with no windows, no electronical or any waves can go through, and they body search you before. And drawings are done not only rooms away, but miles away, in some instances, thousands of miles away. And we'll talk about it, straight from Langley, Virginia, headquarters of the CIA. A CIA operative, a high-ranking operative, and I'm sure you've spoken to him in the past, called Kit Green, tested me personally. And at those times, George, there were no mobile phones. There was no internet. There was no FaceTime and Twitter and Instagram. You had an old-fashioned phone.
That's right.
And, so we'll talk about that test because that I consider to be full, you know, nobody can attack that experiment.
I'll always remember our mutual friend, the late astronaut Edgar Mitchell, talking about a story where his NASA tie clasp just popped up out of nowhere that he had lost, and it just came through the ceiling. Remember that one?
Absolutely. How can I forget it?
Yeah.
You know, I'm opening an Uri Geller Museum here in Old Jaffa because I had collected so many incredible things from sculptures given to me by Salvador Dali because I worked with him, to Picasso plates that belonged to David Bowie, and my Cadillac with 2,000 bent spoons on its body has already been in the Museum of Israel. So I'm going to give a little corner for Ed Mitchell because he was my kind of my mentor. You see, without him, George, very few people know this, I was very concerned leaving Israel and going straight to America.
How old were you then when you left?
In my early 20s.
God, and just a young guy.
I was not told the truth. I didn't know that it's the CIA that were going to test me. I thought it was just a bunch of scientists.
Yeah.
I didn't really know who stood, that the American Defense Department was behind this. And when Dr. Puharich was sent to test me, just so our listeners will know, Dr. Puharich was a doctor, medical doctor, a genius who had links to the CIA. And he was sent here in 1970 to test me first, to see if indeed what I do is real. And he set up a little laboratory in a town very close to Tel Aviv called Herzliya. And when he saw that this is real and very odd and bizarre things happened to us, he called up Ed Mitchell and said, get a letter to Uri, send him something to convince him to leave Israel. And Edgar Mitchell sent me a photograph of himself walking on the moon. And he wrote on it to my friend Uri Geller from Ed Mitchell. And when I got that picture, my goodness, I said, wow, an astronaut sends me a picture and invites me to America. And that's why I made that decision to leave.
Well, I've got to tell you, Uri, I have witnessed what you do. It is remarkable. You've had a controversial life, of course, not because of your own being, but because of others. We have invited for years James Randi to be on our show. He won't come on this program. He said, you support psychics and mentalists, and I'm not going to come on. And I said, look, I try to balance this program. I want to get your side of it. He won't do it. How much of a thorn in your side was he, if he was at all, in your career?
Okay, George, you know, this CIA release is kind of a big stab in the skeptics' ideology and thinking and so on. It's not only about Uri Geller. It's about the UFO papers, et cetera, which skeptics tried to debunk for decades. Now, look, George, if I didn't have a James Randi, I would have had to invent one. You see, the skeptics were my cover. They protected me. They kept the balance between, is Uri Geller real or is he not? And then there was another huge additional gift from the skeptics to me, and that was free publicity. Very few people understand that all publicity is good publicity, no matter what they write about you, as long as they spell your name correctly.
That is exactly what I said.
You know, George, this goes back 100 years ago. Oscar Wilde, we all know Oscar Wilde, and he said something very clever. He said, there is only one worse thing in life than being talked about, and that's not being talked about. So the Randis and the skeptics who tried to debunk me, they were only publicizing me. They were creating a myth around Uri Geller. They created the legend because you know very well that if you're controversial, you become curious. People want to know more about you. Why are they talking about you so much? And, you know, the best example I can give is a current example. In September, I wrote on my Facebook the following words. Whether you like him or not, Donald Trump is going to become the 45th president of the United States. And I knew that for different reasons. But because he was so hugely controversial, more people were interested and curious about Donald Trump. The media were attacking him nonstop. He was called worse things than I was called.
Yes.
He was called a con man, a fraud, a liar, and worse. And he is the president of the United States. He was elected. So it didn't harm him, the controversy. So going back to James Randi, I maybe met him three or four times. I was already controversial in Israel. They attacked me here. And I asked the people who used to create my lectures and my shows on big stages in Israel, how come when there is a negative article about me, not only that all the tickets were sold to my show, but 500 people stayed out without tickets. So when Randy came on the scene, of course, being young, George, you will understand that, I was concerned.
Sure.
I was very concerned on the Johnny Carson show. I was sitting there for 22 minutes being humiliated by Johnny Carson. Mind you, if you look at that show carefully, that spoon bent, and it bent not in my hand. But Johnny Carson kept attacking me and humiliating me.
Yeah, you were not happy on that segment at all.
No, I was shocked. And later I learned that James Randi was involved in the setup. And to complete that Johnny Carson saga, I was kind of destroyed after the show in my mind. And I thought that's the end of Uri Geller. Because everybody said, if you get on Johnny Carson, you made it in America. I went back to my hotel, devastated. I was about to pack up my suitcase and fly back to Israel, to Tel Aviv. I fell on the bed and fell asleep. The next morning, the phone rings, and it's the operator from downstairs. And she says to me, Mr. Geller, I have a Merv Griffin on the line. And I said to her, I remember these words. I said to her, you mean the Merv Griffin? She says, that's who he says he is. So I get on, and he says to me, it was Merv. And Merv says to me, Uri Geller, I saw you last night on Johnny Carson. I want you on my show this week.
Yeah, and it grew.
And that's when I understood. I knew that all publicity will be good for me.
Well, you know, I've seen things that say he's either the greatest mentalist that this planet has ever seen or the greatest magician. I don't know. This is the writer now. He says, I don't know what he is, but he's the best at what he does. And I read that, Uri, and I said, what a great compliment this is.
Absolutely. It couldn't be a bigger compliment for me. You know that Daniel, my son, he's now 36.
Oh, my gosh.
He's a senior prosecutor.
Gosh, he was just a kid when
in
you...
London.
Yeah.
And he came here a few months ago, and he was interviewed on Israeli television because they came to interview me. And Daniel was around, so they said, you know, yeah, may we interview him? And they asked Daniel, tell me, do you believe in your father? Do you think he has real powers? And Daniel kind of smiled. I can't exactly recollect his words, but it was something on these lines. He said, well, if he has real powers, then he's unique and there's only one Uri Geller. But if he managed to fool the whole world, then he must be the best magician on this planet.
That's right. That's absolutely right. Did the children inherit any of these abilities?
No. My daughter, Natalie, who lives in Los Angeles, and my son Daniel, they tried, you can imagine, they tried secretly without me looking to bend spoons, but it never worked for them. Daniel had extrasensory perception. He was hugely and very highly intuitive when he was young. He could do certain things. You tell him a date and he will know that immediately the day, things of that nature. But no, they chose to go their own way. I do remember, though, that I was very concerned that because, you know, I made a lot of money, not from spoon bending, but from dowsing, from finding oil and gold.
Right. Companies would hire you, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the biggest finds was in Mexico when Pemex, the Mexican National Oil Company, mm-hmm. asked me to locate oil for them.
Uri Geller, what quite a guy. Well, I hope you have a great Independence Day. Stick with us, Jimmy Church, on Saturday. I'll be back on Sunday. Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll be with you all the way. For Dan Galante, Donna Walker, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Alex Lonehood, Sean Ladasur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, Tim Banal, George Knapp, and Ian Punnett, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.